Welcome to Thrive in the Future podcast, positive solutions to help you thrive. Homesteading, gardening, community, side hustles, and building skills. At Grow Nut Trees, I still have some elderberry cuttings, and I also have some hazelnut and red mulberry, as well as the usual comfrey crowns and comfrey cuttings. That's at grownuttrees.com. Did you know that nasturtiums are a trap plant for aphids? And basil can improve the growth and flavor of peppers and tomatoes if planted close as a companion plant. Check out those and other tips on my new site, All Garden Advice. That's where you have gardening ideas and tips to help you out. That's allgardenadvice.com. Okay, welcome back to Thrive in the Future. This week, Homestead Padre's back with me. How's it going, Padre?
Doing good. How are you doing?
Good. What's new this week?
Well, a lot new, but finally got my wife a well-earned and much-deserved new car.
Wow.
She has been driving a 2002 Buick Century for I don't know how long. I've barely been keeping that thing running.
2002.
And we got her, and you know, it's not new. It's new to us. It's 2019 Pathfinder.
Oh, that's pretty nice. Good.
And only has 60,000 miles on it.
Yeah, so what's new with the garden?
Nothing. The cold weather won't go away. It's getting down to 38 tonight. Scott, that is unheard of down here. This late in the spring, that doesn't. I've been here 11 years. I've never seen this before.
Wow.
I'm about 3 weeks behind on everything.
Goodness.
Because the cold nights will not go away.
Yeah. So you had an interesting tweet this week about you got some dietary restrictions that are changing, and you're thinking about rethinking your entire garden. So what's the story with that?
So I have irritable bowel syndrome. I've had it as long as I can remember. I think I was diagnosed when I was 10 or 11 years old. So about 30 years. And my wife has Crohn's disease.
I'm sorry.
She is a cancer survivor. So being a cancer survivor, Crohn's disease increases her chances of developing colon cancer in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been doing a lot of research. I don't know if you've noticed my tweets. Food has kind of become my passion. Food is medicine. And sure. All the research I've been doing, it all boils down to inflammation. Inflammation inside the body. And inflammation causes my IBS. Inflammation causes her Crohn's disease. Inflammation is a major part of diabetes and cancer and Parkinson's disease and, you know, arthritis. It's all chronic inflammation.
Yep.
So,
most of us have IBS. Most of us have IBS and don't know it. So, you know, because of all the toxins and the Roundup and,
yes,
you know, and all that stuff.
It's everywhere. And, you know, what I've learned as of recently is even in America, our diets, even if we go organic, truly organic, no our farmer, no chemicals, mm-hmm. no pesticides, our diet still sucks for inflammation.
Yep.
I've seen and I was recently on this train. I've seen a call for the bringing back butter, cooking with butter, cooking in animal fats, lard. Mm-hmm. I was on that train. Well, now I know that those are just all inflammatories. You know, it's healthier in some aspects, yes, but they still cause inflammation and big time inflammation. So we are an inflamed country.
Inflamed country in many ways.
So I got to do some research.
So how's that change your outlook then?
Well, I started doing some research. I was like, well, what can I do? Obviously my diet needs to change because let me back up a step. So my wife has been on Humira, which is a shot in her stomach. Every 2 weeks, she gives herself a shot in the stomach. She's been on other medicines. She's been on different things, and nothing's working for her. The Humira worked for about a year. It doesn't work anymore. Mm. I watched her go through about 5 days of intense pain where she couldn't get out of bed. She couldn't eat. She couldn't walk. I had to help her to the bathroom. And I hadn't seen her like that since the Crohn's first started, before she was diagnosed with it. Wow. And I was like, I'm over 40 now. I myself am increased risk of heart disease, heart attack, stroke, those things. My wife is not doing well. She's not going to make it. She almost died the first time. Mm-hmm. And before the diagnosis and before the different treatments they put her on. So I was like, something has to change more than what we've already changed. You know, we live, we don't live completely natural. It's so hard to do that in today's world, but I think we do more so than most people nowadays. As far as no chemicals and things like that in our diet, and we try to keep them out of our house, period. I'm the guy that sanitizes my countertops with hydrogen peroxide. So I got research in inflammation, and I was like, I've been talking more and more about food as medicine, because, you know, I'm a practicing herbalist, and there's a herb for everything. And I'm like, well, what can, so the herbalism kind of led into what my friend Amber Lake Farms, I don't know if he coined the term, but he's the first I've seen to use it. Pharmacy, F-A-R-M, pharmacy. Mm-hmm. And with the idea of food as medicine. And I've just run with it, and I've started reading books, and I've researched. I got 20 books on my coffee table right now, all on inflammation and anti-inflammatory diets and things like that. And wow. One thing I learned was there's a few diets out there that are anti-inflammatory. Keto is one of them. Keto is pretty popular right now. But one that stuck out to me that is highly anti-inflammatory and probably at the top of the list is the Mediterranean diet.
That's anti-inflammatory?
It's anti-inflammatory.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of
what's the Mediterranean diet have?
It's very little meat. It's mostly vegetarian based. My favorite food's a hamburger. yeah. I love beef. I have come to realize I can't deny the downfalls of red meat in our diets, even red fish meats. As far as their inflammatory properties, like I said, there's lots of good benefits to them, but I'm specifically targeting inflammation right now. Mm-hmm. So when you get to meats, they're lean meats. So when you do get the red meats, you're looking at goat, you're looking at lamb, venison. Venison's not officially Mediterranean, but it falls in line with the Mediterranean diet and the guidelines. And, you know, deer and goat are very closely related anyway.
Sure.
But you're looking at more shellfish. You're looking at more whitefish, some salmon, chicken, things like that. If there's a meat, 9 times out of 10, it's going to be chicken in the Mediterranean diet. And it's very small portions of it. So the Mediterranean diet, meat is used more as a flavoring agent of the dish than as a main star of the dish.
Right.
Even the American diet, unless you're vegetarian or vegan, meat is your main star.
Yeah. So one of the challenges there is people think Mediterranean is Italian, and they think that includes pasta and all that stuff. And my understanding is the Mediterranean doesn't include large amounts of pasta or anything like that, right?
That is correct. And there are some pastas, but when they're there, they're whole grain, whole wheat pastas.
Uh-huh.
And again, you're going to eat them in small portions.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a mainstay. It's not like you're having spaghetti and meatballs because you think it's Italian and Mediterranean, where spaghetti's piled high on your plate. Pasta here in a Mediterranean diet is more of a side item or a small base to everything on top of it. It's very fresh fruit, fresh vegetable oriented diet.
Mm-hmm.
I have popsicles in the freezer right now that I'm making for the kids, because, you know, everybody likes ice cream. But in the Mediterranean diet, it consists of, the one I have made right now is blueberries and strawberries pureed, mixed with Greek yogurt, stuck in popsicle molds.
Sure.
So that is that's a Mediterranean ice cream, basically, mm-hmm. right?
Right. This and high in olive oil. Olive oil is very prominent in the Mediterranean diet too, right?
It is. Mediterranean diet is a very high fat diet. Mm-hmm. With the fats coming mostly from olive oils.
Sure.
So we all use olive oil here and there. We've all sauteed something in olive oil. And most recipes, most American recipes are a couple tablespoons, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of Mediterranean dishes are a half cup, three quarters cup, a whole cup of olive oil.
Really? Like a whole cup?
It's drenched. Mm-hmm. And but if you have high quality actual olive oil, because there's so much fake stuff out there.
Oh yeah.
It's a healthy fat. It's high fat, but it's a healthy fat. You know, there are good fats and bad fats. Like there's good cholesterols, bad cholesterols.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a change. We had a Mediterranean breakfast this morning, which consisted of potatoes, cooked in olive oil,
mm-hmm.
Julienne red onions, some diced up peppers, and those go all in a skillet and they cook together in a cast iron skillet. And once the potatoes are almost done, you break eggs on top of it, like you're making a sunny side up egg. Yeah. So you do a sunny side up egg that kind of cooks into the potato medley that you've already cooked up. And sure. that's your Mediterranean, your breakfast.
So what about the nightshades and the, you know, in the peppers and all that?
Oh, it's heavy in peppers, heavy in tomatoes.
Right. Because most of those are, you know, I mean, supposedly inflammatory nightshades, right?
Some science says there are. Some science says it isn't. I've focused a lot on a Cretan diet because the people of Crete, Crete has more centennials than any other place on earth.
Okay.
They eat just a ton of tomatoes and peppers in their diet. Tomatoes is a big staple. There's tomatoes in everything, whether it's paste or sauce or diced or sun-dried, like it's in everything. Cherry tomatoes are a big part of a lot of dishes. Cherry tomatoes cut in half and roasted.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been an interesting study, and I can report in the last 2 days I've spent $500 revamping my pantry and my refrigerator, getting rid of the crap that was in there before and restocking it with much healthier foods. With the weather the way it is right now, I'm kind of in between. So my winter garden's done. It's harvested. Plants are pulled, making ready for the spring garden.
Mm-hmm.
But like I complained before, the cold weather's still here. So the spring garden's not really kicking off.
Well, yeah. So how are you replanting everything then to match that more like that diet then?
So what I'm doing is I'm pulling plants that aren't really in the Mediterranean because everything's stunted right now. And I had a disaster in my greenhouse that's a long story, but I've had to replant half of the seeds that I've already started.
Goodness.
And it involves three stray cats and I'm not happy about it, but so I took the opportunity to pull out some of the hot peppers that I grow. I'm growing a lot less melons than I would normally grow. And I do sell those in the summertime,
mm-hmm.
but right now this year I have to focus on, I have canned foods. You know, we grow, we harvest, we can dehydrate, freeze, whatever. I got a lot of stuff that's now we're not really kosher for diet. Corn, for instance, corn is out.
Yeah. Corn, not good.
I have 28 quarts of corn in there.
28 quarts. So you got chickens. You got chickens though, right?
Yes.
Hey, feed the chickens.
It is going in the chicken feed.
Yep.
But they so this year I'm gonna have to scale back a little bit on my market growing just so I can replace my pantry.
Okay.
Especially with what I've paid in the last week on groceries, I don't want that to be a regular thing.
Oh yeah.
Holy crap, fresh organic and is expensive.
Yep. So what kind of stuff are you switching over to then?
I'm sorry, say that again.
What kind of stuff are you switching over to then?
I am growing. I've planted the scratch that I've ordered garbanzo bean seeds. I'm going to plant those. I've never grown garbanzo before. I am going to plant pinto beans. I've never grown dry pintos before. I'm planting edamame, which soybean. I've never grown those before. Increasing the amount of squashes and zucchinis that I grow, increasing the variety of tomato that I grow. When it comes to anti-inflammatory, one of the key parts is antioxidants. And a lot of vegetables and fruit, people don't realize that the darker it is, the more antioxidant that it holds. So I was growing regular Martino Roma tomatoes, regular beefsteak tomatoes, which a lot of those will end up going to market. And for the family, I was growing Cherokee Purple, which is a beautiful color. It's a dark color, but I've also added Black Beauty to it. And if anybody hasn't seen it, it's other than the very center of the tomato, which is reddish, it's about a solid black tomato. And I've never grown those before. Everything I've read, people talk about the flavor is just amazing in those tomatoes. So I'm looking forward to those. So we're
I like the pineapple tomato. It's larger, it's orangey yellow, and then it has a citrusy like taste. And some of the tomatoes get almost a pound just for the one tomato. So we grow a lot of those. We grow lemon drop cherry tomatoes.
I have a variety. I cannot remember the name of cherry tomatoes that I just put seeds in the seed trays for. But on the vine, they can range from gold to purple. So it's a nice variety of, and if I have to buy cherry tomatoes, that's generally what I buy. It's a medley pack. It goes from gold to purple to dark reds, and I don't know the science behind it, but the color of the tomato, for lack of better words, determines the taste of the tomato. So the flavor profile changes ever so slightly. So if I'm throwing cherry tomatoes in a salad, I like the little different little hints of flavor from the different tomatoes.
Yeah, I've had trouble in the past with the black beauties trying to figure out when they were ripe enough, because they're already dark.
It's gonna be new. It's gonna be challenging. I don't expect it to be just simple, but I think it'll be rewarding. And I planted 24 seeds. So, if I can get half of those to germinate, I'll be happy. Germination rate on the seed pack says 90% germination, so 90% would be excellent, but really planted for 60 to 70% realistically. But I've planted tomatoes before and got 100% germination rate. So, you just never know. But
Interesting. How's your amaranth doing? You were going to plant like 2,000 amaranth.
cold snap got them.
Oh, no.
We got down to 35 degrees a week ago, and I could not keep my greenhouse hot enough. I tried. I had heaters out there. I had the old trick of water in the black bucket.
Yeah.
It heats up during the day and radiates at night. I could not keep them. And then the cats. And then some plants that overwintered, like the red Savinelli peppers, went in there 3 days ago, and fire ants have completely taken over the pots. It's not been a good spring for me, Scott.
Goodness, that's terrible.
Luckily, I didn't plant all the amaranth seeds. I only planted about half of them.
Okay.
So it's just going to be a matter of taking another 8-hour day to plant 2,000 seeds.
Mm-hmm. So how do you use the amaranth?
We grow it for the grain.
Mm-hmm. So when it goes to seed, then you...
We harvest the seed.
You grind it up, right?
Some of it we grind up. So there's three different ways you can do it. You can leave it whole.
Mm-hmm.
And you can use it like a... you can cook it up like a pearl couscous.
Yeah.
It's not quite that big, but like a couscous. Or you can kind of rough grind it and make a hominy out of it.
Mm.
Or you can fine grind it and make a flour out of it.
Mm.
And most of it will be fine ground into flour for baking. So we'll have amaranth bread.
Mm, that sounds good.
Versus a standard grain bread.
Yeah. Speaking of bread, do you still have the bakery stuff going on for the market?
We do. Sort of. So we lost our produce people. I took a little bit to market, but we were not the main produce people. We lost them last November. They kind of hinted around to not coming back, and they've been doing produce for 20 some years.
Wow.
And then 2 weeks before the market, the spring market, the opening day, we got a message that, yeah, we're done. We're not coming back.
Goodness.
So, like today, whereas I would be baking normally, I was taking off on an hour trip to a produce supplier, picking up produce so that we can sell at the market. Because when the produce goes away, a lot of the foot traffic goes away.
Interesting. Okay.
So we're trying to save the foot traffic.
Uh-huh.
And right now, we're not making maybe 20% profit, which kind of covers the gas to go down there and grab everything.
Goodness.
And we're really just trying to pay for the produce because we're trying to get to May and June where our crops are growing.
Sure.
Because even though I'm not focusing on market crops, I'm focusing more than in years past. So for instance, I have 40 tomato plants. I have 30 squash plants. I have 30 cucumber plants, way more than I would normally plant of those types, just so I can grow enough to take to a small farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
Just to keep. So we're right now trying to get produce from a wholesale supplier just to have it at the markets to get the foot traffic coming back in.
Wow.
The mayor of the city of Diamond Head emailed me last week begging me. She goes, if you know anybody who can do produce, please. Because the people that did our market on Saturday did their market on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple emails back and forth. And I agreed to do produce for the Diamond Head market as well, which is where we'll be heading to tomorrow. And which means I had to buy double the produce that I bought the first week I bought produce.
Goodness.
So we're several hundred dollars sunk into this wholesaler because produce ain't cheap right now. You know, tomatoes and corn and cucumbers are all from South Florida. The lemons are from California. I don't know where the onions are from. I got a case of cantaloupe. They're from Honduras. The people can shoot me if they want to because it's not an American grown crop. But if you want cantaloupes in March, guess what? They're coming from Central America.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the whole thing. You buy apples, they're going to be from New Zealand at this point.
Right. Yep. So it's, and yeah, I got to charge more than the grocery store. And honestly, it's probably the same product that gets shipped to the grocery store.
Hmm.
But people pay more at the market. And I'm upfront with everybody. This is a South Florida hothouse tomato. This is a California lemon. So, you know, I'm upfront with everybody where it comes from. I'm not trying to deceive anybody, and people are still paying for it. I think it's just cause it's part of the market experience, right?
Sure.
You go and you get your veggies and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So like last week I had English cucumbers, English seedless cucumbers, Florida tomatoes, and Utah red potatoes. And that's all I had at the market. This week I'll have tomatoes and regular burpless cucumbers. I bought a 50-pound bag of onions, yellow onions to take out there. That is a ton of onions. I can't explain to you how big a 50-pound bag of onions is. But we got that. We got lemon, zucchini, squash, cantaloupe, corn.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
I got some South Florida corn going out there.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna see. We're just trying to make it until our crops are growing. So like corn's out of our diet, but I'm still planning. I think 4,000 square feet of corn is what I have planned.
Wow, 4,000 square feet.
Just so I can take it to market, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Our herd's been cut in half. So we've cut our pasture in half, and what used to be pasture now is amaranth and corn.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a thing. It's all, we're just trying to get by right now. I'm sitting outside talking to you, and it's probably, I'm going to guess it's 52 degrees.
Wow. And that's chilly.
Normally this time of year, this would be a cold low for a night. We're supposed to get down to like 38 degrees tonight.
Goodness.
And it's just, everything's stunted. The tomatoes aren't really growing. I'm just happy they've survived these 30 some degree nights.
Oh yeah. Mine usually free. They don't make it past 40.
They don't like it past 40 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
I've already told my wife, I'm like, there's a good chance. We're so far behind on seeds with the cold temperatures and all the disruptions I've had on planting seeds. I was like, there's a good chance that I'm going to have to go drop another couple hundred dollars and buy starts.
Mm.
For a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
So I can get 36 tomato plants for $20. Not too bad a price.
Wow.
Same thing, squash, zucchini, all that. I can get them a flat. It's $20 for a flat. There's 36 plants on a flat and at the Home and Garden Center near me down the road. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I talked to the owner. He's going to help me out and return if I have excess from Saturday. So if I'll go to Friday market, Saturday market, if I have excess, he wants me to come sit out there in his parking lot on like Monday and Tuesday with extras, just to kind of help draw more people into his business. So we kind of bartered services a little bit for a cheaper price on plants.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah, that's what it's coming to.
It's a rough start, and I'm really worried about hurricane season this year, more so than I have been in years past. So it's going to be an interesting year.
Yeah, it's going to be strange. We had a weird winter, and two of the last 3 years, we had a May frost. Last year, we had a frost that was normal, but everything was ahead by 2 or 3 weeks. Because it was overly warm in February, and the apple tree only had apples on one side of the tree because the other side got frosted. The guy who is my apple nursery guy, he lost all of his apples. The major chestnut orchard, they lost all of their chestnut crop. And you know, luckily, the place where I get my chestnuts, the elementary school, was shaded by a hedge to the north, so I was able to get quite a bit of chestnuts out of that. But yeah, I've had to move all, I've got things stacked sky high in the greenhouse because they were already, you know, we had 20 degrees the night before last. So yeah
it's and we're supposed to have a couple more nights early next week in the 30s, upper 30s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I don't know, it's such a weird year. Like this is January lows for us. Our average last frost date is February 28th.
Goodness.
So we're a month past last frost. That's why I'm 3 weeks behind schedule on everything right now.
Yeah.
You know, I haven't even put potatoes in the ground. I put potatoes in the ground in February usually.
Yeah, I have potatoes in the ground already.
I haven't put potatoes in the ground. I'm afraid they're going to pop up and we're going to get a cold snap.
Yeah.
And, you know, down here I can grow potatoes 11 months out of the year. So my harvest will just be later than most people's, but
sure.
I figure instead of an early May harvest, I'll have a mid June harvest and it won't be too bad.
Yeah. I put some in the ground a couple of weeks ago. They haven't come up yet, but who knows?
It's probably a good thing right now.
I think so. Sometimes I have to go around and cover them up with a bucket or something if we're going to get a late frost, but you know.
Yeah, it's NC. I couldn't even cover my plants, Scott. The wind
you have too many of them.
The wind that's come with this.
Mm-hmm.
Every cold blast we've gotten has come with 35, 45 mile an hour gust winds.
Yeah, I saw your video of the trees blowing around the other night.
Yeah, it's windy here June through early March, but usually it dies down and goes away. So I guess what I'm saying is the weather patterns are not in sync this year. They weren't in sync last year, like you were talking about.
Sure.
I didn't grow a single blueberry last year because of that late frost. We got a late frost here.
Yep.
Mid March, I think, is when it came through.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a weird solar cycle. You know, what was that, a mass coronal ejection the other day and stuff, and you know, was supposed to be able to see the northern lights all the way down to Iowa or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, things like that. And then they said a couple of months ago that the northern lights were all the way down to almost down to Colorado or Arizona.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, it was another big one that hit us.
Yeah. So,
and you know, yeah, I like to long-term forecast.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that's going back and looking at the records from years past.
Sure.
What years are like this year and how did they work out?
Mm-hmm.
You get patterns that way. But you know, that stuff doesn't take into account the sun.
Right.
And I can look at this all I want to, and it's not lining up. With the way the year started, it's not how the year is going in recorded years in the past.
Sure.
So it is, and I know it's the sun. You're right on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got sun, we got increased volcanic activity around the earth right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all that stuff plays into effect. I made a post last January 2023 about the volcano erupting in 2021 or 2022.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's talking about this, but hundreds of thousands of metric tons of water vapor was dumped into the stratosphere. It's like, sure. that affects global weather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nobody, it was 1823 or something like that. They had a year without a summer all the way down to Virginia.
Yeah, that was Krakatoa in the South Pacific that erupted that caused that.
Yep. Freezing, had killing frost all the way through every month of the year, all the way down to South Virginia.
Yeah.
And famine and stuff. So, yeah.
It's all it takes is one volcanic eruption or one really angry solar storm, or it just jacks everything up. And then, you know, this year the this winter, the Gulf and the Atlantic Ocean, it never cooled down.
That's going to make for an interesting hurricane season.
Yeah, last year was pretty calm. We didn't get a single storm in the Gulf last year. Which is unusual. Usually we at least get a tropical storm or something, you know, that churns the water up.
Yeah.
So moving into a La Nina, which means there's going to be no wind shear over the Gulf. So now we got 2 years of hot water and no wind shear. Like, I'm kind of a little worried about this year.
No wind shear is bad.
No, wind shear is very bad. The only thing I can hope is the Sahara kicks a bunch of dust up.
Yeah, it's doing that too, so that might help. But when it kicks a bunch of dust up, doesn't that feed into the hurricanes?
No, it dries the air out.
Oh, it does. Okay. Yeah. Because it is doing that, it's kicking up a lot of dust.
Because we have, I guess about 5, 6 years ago, we had so much Sahara dust here in South Mississippi, our sky was orange.
Goodness.
That is a lot of African dust. But that was a pretty low year on hurricanes too.
Sure.
And so,
Yeah, and
I
all that
kind of.
dust is not just sticking around there. I mean, it's going up higher in the atmosphere too. So,
Oh, yeah.
yeah, it's just between that and whatever they're doing with these weird, contrails or whatever, which they pretty much have now admitted to that it's between that and sky whatever that is,
You looked into the
the
new Tennessee
satellites.
law?
What?
Have you looked into the new Tennessee law dealing with contrails?
Yeah, there's a couple states that are saying you're not allowed to do any of that stuff over our
Right.
state. I think the FAA will probably override that kind of stuff, but yeah, I think it's also interesting that there's so many man-made satellites up there for the internet that Elon's doing, that it's starting to mess with astronomy. And the whole thing is that there's a quote in Ovid's Metamorphosis, Roman document that said the animals are made looking down, because they're grazers, but man was made to look up.
Right.
And one of the monasteries, the Orthodox monasteries, sent out a thing at Christmas time, and they said, our skies, you can't see the stars, and when you do see the stars, it's all beguiled by a bunch of man-made satellites, and it's just ruining the beauty of God's creation and disconnecting us from, we're made to look up.
Yeah.
There's
You know,
kids that have never ever seen anything of the sky, the ones that are in the city, and probably,
it's not even in the city. I'm very rural. I'm 40 minutes from the city, and looking up right now, I can see the really bright ones.
Sure.
But Scott, I remember when I was a kid, I grew up rural. I could see the Milky Way,
Yeah. I live a
and
hour from Kansas City, and I've got light wash all the way up to the vertex, all the way up to the top, the right
yeah.
above my head. And it's light wash there, light wash to the south, light wash to the east, and it's like, there's not going to be any more stargazing after a while. Not to mention the just increased cloud cover.
I told my wife I wanted to take a trip to the American Southwest one time in the next few years. I want to see the Grand Canyon. I've never seen it. But one of the reasons I want to go out there is my daughter. My daughter loves everything space. Everything NASA space. We got up at 3:45 the other morning when the Dragon X capsule reentered atmosphere
Right.
because it landed south of Mobile Bay, which Mobile Bay is an hour and a half drive from my house.
Sure.
So
Do you see it
we
coming
got,
down?
oh yeah, it's just a streak of fire all the way across the sky, and
Wow.
I got video of it on my phone.
Cool.
But so you might my wife, my daughter. She loves everything space. I want to take her out to the desert. So it's one of the few remaining places that you can still see the sky.
Yeah.
And you can see it in the middle of the ocean too. And my wife talked about a cruise. And I was like, but you're on the cruise ship and all the lights from the cruise ship just drown it all out too.
Oh,
So
yeah.
that doesn't really help anything. So the desert, unless you got a small boat yourself, the desert's about the only place you can go anymore. I know there's some place still left in the Rockies that you can see the sky real good too. So,
Arkansas. I've been to some places in the middle of Arkansas or whatever that are just pristine, but yeah.
it's so it's so hard to, the sky is not the same as when I was little.
Yeah.
And listening to my dad, you know, my dad turned 65 this year. He said the sky we looked at when I was little was not the same sky he looked at when he was little.
Sure.
You know, I got, she got her love of stargazing from me. Mm-hmm. I got my love of stargazing from my dad.
Yep.
You know, it's something that he got it from his dad. It's multiple generations of going out in the backyard and watching meteor showers and.
Sure. And, I could and, see the, growing up, I could see the Milky Way in the backyard in town. So, yeah. You know, now that's unheard of, but you know.
It's a damn shame. Pardon my language. It makes me mad. It makes me mad. It really makes me mad. I don't know if you know who Kyle Clinney is.
No.
On Twitter. But he's a good friend of mine. He's up in Michigan. And we just had this discussion the other day. I was like, Kyle, I'm mad. And like, what makes me so mad is feeling like there's absolutely nothing I can do about any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's, I'm about to launch a crusade, Scott. I've decided to go back to college and I want to study nutrition and become a dietitian. And, yeah, I'm 8 years away from my daughter graduating high school. There's not going to be a need for me to stay at home anymore. I got to do something. So, but I've developed such a passion for food, especially in the department of the anti-inflammatory, that I want to, it's the only way I can think of that I can make a small difference somewhere. If I can help educate people and get them away from everything they've grown accustomed to, that's so bad for them. Yeah, I want to do it. It's not going to help me see the stars any better. But maybe I can help the environment a little bit.
That sounds awesome.
You know, it's the only way we're going to get processed foods out of our diet is if we convince enough people to not process foods out of their diets. You know, we have to create a demand for fresh food, you know.
Sure.
What was it? I read something the other day in the 1930s or 40s, 80% of Americans' food was grown in their backyard.
Mm-hmm.
In suburbia. It started with the Victory Gardens, but gardening stayed for a decade afterwards.
Right.
And Americans just got away from that. I mean, shoot, a lot of suburban neighborhoods now, you're not even allowed to have a garden.
So, yeah, I know. They're starting to talk about inspecting your garden and all that other stuff. I'm like, no, you're not.
Yeah, so, it was the last year, the can't remember if it was the USDA or the EPA, they created their website where you could register your garden.
Exactly, yeah.
And I was like, you're not registering my garden. My chickens are registered and tested, and that's bad enough.
Uh-huh.
But if I want to sell eggs, it's a requirement in Mississippi.
Sure.
So it's the National Poultry Improvement Plan, the NPIP.
Mm-hmm.
They, yeah. And it's free. They come out and they take some blood from a couple of chickens. They run tests, make sure there's no diseases. And when the tests come back clean, I get a certificate.
Hmm.
Then Mississippi charges me $10 for an egg seller's license.
Hmm.
But it's, I can kind of understand that, but I'm still not happy about that. Going on a registry, I don't mind the testing part. I don't like the registry part, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so. we could sell eggs, but there's some question on whether they have to inspect or not. And then you basically have to wash them in bleach. And it's like, okay, you know,
ours have to be washed and they have to be refrigerated with an electric source.
Oh, wow.
So I have found out that there's electric coolers out there.
Mm-hmm.
And Mississippi will allow that as a transportation and storage method for farmers markets.
Sure.
So when I get to that point, it's going to be another $200 investment. And they're making it harder and harder. Like, I understand food safety laws and food safety regulations. I live in them. You know, a lot of what we sell under cottage laws. And cottage laws are, any of your listeners that don't know, it's a list of foods that you can sell without regulation and inspection. Most states have cottage laws. Some do not. New Jersey doesn't have any. North Carolina doesn't have any. Two off the top of my head that I know of. So no states, like, you can't sell jelly that you canned at home. But Mississippi's pretty lax on things, but they're beginning to tighten the belt on a lot of stuff. We now have inspectors coming out to farmers markets. We have the IRS hitting the farmers markets right now. They're making their rounds around the coast.
Yeah, I think they're doing that. The state tax folks are doing that here because they think that most of the people at the farmers market are not paying state income tax. So
I would willing to bet the majority are not.
Yeah, I bet so too. So,
so we had to, our market's never been an official market with rules and an application and none of that stuff. Like, you call, say, hey, I'm coming Saturday, and we make a spot for you. Mm-hmm. So we've had to go back and create a list of rules and get you to sign at the bottom that you understand and accept the rules and your name and your address and right. your business name if you have one and all that. But one line in there in big bold letters is, we do not collect sales tax. You are responsible for your own sales tax.
Yep.
We've had to do that with all the inspectors coming around now, because if you don't specify it in Mississippi, then the county clerks expect the market organizers to collect sales tax at the end of the day. I don't want a fool paying everybody's taxes wrong.
Right.
I have to deal with my own taxes, which I'm late on paying this month. But,
well, very good. Sounds like you have some interesting challenges going on this year.
Yeah. And I did want to say one thing about, moving to a Mediterranean diet. Especially looking at Greece and Cretan diet, I was inspired a lot by the Orthodox Church. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the Mediterranean diet, once you cut out like the oils, it's fast friendly.
Yeah.
I was like, it's no wonder the Greeks eat this way.
Sure. But,
a lot of it is inspired by the Orthodox Church and I personally have fallen in love with Greece over the last 6 months, the country itself, not just the church, but in its food. I've eaten at a couple of Greek restaurants and just love the food. Mm-hmm. So that's helped guide me in the Mediterranean direction. And great. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of it's Americanized, but
yeah,
it's inspired me to explore more authentic foods.
Yeah, that sounds good.
So, you know, the biggest challenge right now is giving up meat. I'm used to eating meat at every meal.
Oh yeah, I know. We're in the middle of Lent right now, and that's a long time. Shrimp is making the difference. Avocados are making the difference from a fat standpoint.
Shrimp was making a difference, but I'm kind of gotten tired of shrimp.
Yeah, I'm tired of shrimp, and it's not even halfway through yet. Yeah. So, you know, but
so I was like, you know, Mediterranean diet, they eat meat once a week. Mm-hmm. I was like, if I can get through Lent, I have had one slip up, I will confess it now. But if I can get through the rest of Lent and really get on board this Mediterranean diet next year when Lent rolls around, it won't be so bad.
Very good. Thank you, Padre.
Yes, sir.
Hey, if you like this episode, leave us a tip on Venmo or Cash App at Thriving the Future. Or join the Patreon, patreon.com/thrivingthefuture. You get early episodes and you get extras. Thank you. Check out Thriving News. That's where Perpin and I share longer form articles about homesteading, mindset, milpa gardening, food forest, etc. Go check it out at thrivingnews.com. Thank you for listening to Thrive in the Future podcast. If you like what you hear, please click that like or subscribe button in your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter at Thrive in the Fute, and also go to thriveinthefuture.com.